Coming up on this edition of Chippewa Valley This Week, we get local reaction from the executive director of Fierce Freedom to two national stories from earlier this week. And also, part two of our conversation with Eau Claire County Social Work Manager Nancy Welzine on the growing problem of elder abuse and what can be done about it. It's all ahead on this edition of Chippewa Valley This Week, a public affairs program of WWIB and WOGO Radio. I'm Mark Halverson. Yes, two big stories capturing the attention on one day earlier this week. One of them having to do with the verdict in the Sean Diddy Combs trial, where he was found guilty of transporting people for prostitution. The verdict delivered Wednesday at a federal courthouse in New York City. Combs was found not guilty of the most serious charges against him, including racketeering and sex trafficking. And the other big story this week, the U.S. Supreme Court voting in favor of age verification for children on porn sites. And we get reaction to both of those stories from Kat Morgan, the executive director of Fierce Freedom, the Eau Claire nonprofit that is a anti-human trafficking education organization. I began my conversation with Morgan by asking.
So a couple of big developments today. I saw Fierce Freedom weighing in on. First of all, Sean Diddy Combs found not guilty on the major charges of sex trafficking, convicted on some lesser charges of prostitution. What's your response?
I think crushing disappointment. I feel that the jury was sort of convinced that the women that were the victims that really came forward and were so brave and spoke their truth, I think that the jury saw them as, they didn't realize that they were coerced. And I think that that's really speaking to a bigger problem, is that we often don't understand what coercion looks like, because they use the, you know, his lawyers were using the messages that were sent after they were being forced and coerced to engage in sexual acts that they did not want to be engaged with. They used these text messages where they said that they really enjoyed it to basically discount everything and say, you know, you weren't coerced into this. But really, so many victims that we've worked with have told us, it's like, I had to, in order to survive, I had to convince this person that I wanted to be there. And it's this illusion of consent that really casts sort of this divide between truth and fiction here. So I think that that's really unfortunate that he got away with so much, and he was facing a life in prison, and now he's pleading down and acting like, you know, so relieved, and now these victims have to live with this decision.
What are the broader implications of this, if any, for just the fight against human trafficking?
Yeah, I think it really speaks again to our hypersexualized culture, and we have such a pornified culture. And so I guess that, again, our pornified culture is so prevalent. And I think that a lot of these jurors are operating with this idea of, well, she clearly wanted to be there, because we've really had this so often in porn where people believe that that subject must want to be there, when really there's no way that we could know that. And a lot of times they are being manipulated. They are being abused behind closed doors with a perpetual, you know, proverbial gun to their head that we don't see. So again, that illusion of consent. So I think that the ramifications of this, again, are just feeding into that narrative, which is that, you know, this person that is a quote unquote sex worker wants to be there, when really there's so much behind the scenes that is keeping that person there against their will. So it's a real frustration, I think, in the fight against trafficking, because it's really making it synonymous with sex work, and people thinking they're conflating the two and saying that, you know, sex work is something that somebody will willingly enter into, and it's a legitimate profession. And so again, that just, I think, feeds into how the juror saw these two victims, and the fact that, again, they sent these text messages, they were involved in this exploitative act, and really for the purpose of, like, Sean Combs, he, when we look at trafficking, we look at force, fraud, or coercion for the purpose of commercial sexual exploitation. And I can hear people thinking, what do you mean commercial? So that's anything of value being traded. How I see this as being trafficking is, this man used power, manipulation, and coercion, his status, his charm, his charisma, his money, And in return, he was manipulating these women to basically complete these sex acts under duress. And then he was getting sexual gratification, and he was filming this as well. And he could have passed those videos on, you know, and had people pay for those as well. We don't know about that, but mm-hmm. that happens a lot.
Fierce Freedom Executive Director Cap Morgan reacting with disappointment with the verdict and the Sean Diddy Combs verdict this week, which included him being acquitted on his most serious charges of racketeering and sex trafficking. I also talked with Morgan this week about the U.S. Supreme Court voting in favor of age verification for children on pornographic websites, in which she says on her social media posts, now let's get Wisconsin on board to pass such laws in our state.
Oh, absolutely.
How many states? I know Utah has done this. How many
yeah,
states have?
So according to Exodus Cry, yeah. which is another really mm-hmm. fantastic organization, we've actually had them on
I
the
know
podcast.
You had Layla
yeah.
on.
We so it sounds like 39 states have passed or introduced age verification laws. And now with the green light from the Supreme Court, this means let's all get on board. Let's pass these laws. I know that there have been.
So what was basically what did this decision say today?
So essentially this means that so right now porn sites like Pornhub, which are just huge, and they are profiting off of the exploitation of children, and they're allowing children to find their sites really easily. There's a lot of easy workarounds, even if there is sort of a, you know, our verification of like, are you 18? You can just easily, quickly lie about it. And so this is actually meaning that children in these states will not have access to these porn sites. They won't be able to accidentally stumble upon them. So just, you know, horrifically thinking about even just a really young, like a young person, even like a 2-year-old could be like playing on a phone, accidentally stumbling on a porn site. It happens all the time. And it has these really far-reaching consequences. And so finally, the Supreme Court, and again, there wasn't a complete majority. I mean, it wasn't a complete consensus.
Yeah.
There was a majority that's saying that this matters, and we need to protect children being exposed to porn because we're seeing some of the harm that's been done.
What's the holdup in the state legislature?
I think that this is what's really exciting and encouraging about this this ruling is that now this gives an opportunity to bring some movement, I think, to state legislation and having this precedent set by federal lawmakers. I think that they're saying that, hey, this is really harmful. This is really something important. And again, it sounds like 39 states have already passed these laws. I think Minnesota, Wisconsin, looks like they have not yet. So let's get on that. Let's get this passed for the children in our state today.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
Fierce Freedom Executive Director Cap Morgan weighing in there on two national stories this week, including that U.S. Supreme Court decision from earlier this week. And a reminder that the Fierce Freedom Oh Freedom event coming up at Carson Park a week from Wednesday night, July 16th, 5 to 8 in the evening. You and your family are invited. Meanwhile, part two of our conversation on elder abuse. We continue with Nancy Welzine. She is the Eau Claire County Social Work Manager. We began talking with her last week, and we left off where she was about midway through running through 10 facts everyone should know about this growing problem of elder abuse. All right, number 5, common signs of abuse or neglect include bed sores, unexplained bruises, sudden weight loss, and poor hygiene.
Yes, and I think those are most commonly seen in when individuals are living in an apartment or a care setting. You can see that in either setting.
Mm-hmm. Number 6, older adults with cognitive decline or disability such as dementia face increased risk.
They do. Often individuals with dementia are not always viewed as good reporters. So if they do share information, sometimes it's dismissed as not being accurate because of their memory. So it's very, I would always encourage people to be cautious when people are sharing that they've had an experience. You need to really listen closely to what they're telling you. Because although they may lack capacity, there's a reason they're sharing this. So there's usually some truth involved with it.
Number 7, during the COVID-19 pandemic, community-based elder abuse rose by as much as 84%.
That's, yes. COVID was really I don't even know how to explain COVID. COVID had a substantial impact on seniors. Many of them faced forced isolation. So for those individuals who were very social and were very productive and had all these things that they really engaged in, if they didn't have a lot of ongoing support, COVID really caused a lot of significant isolation, which led to depression and a lot of physical medical issues as well. So that's where I think it's had significant impact on the seniors.
And so then how have we worked our way out of that? I mean, did that just take everything to a worse level? Or you can tell kind of that COVID period 2020 into 21 where it was the worst.
I think COVID was more of a gateway. So it's like a gate was opened and we see a very different environment now. Although as a society, people are back to normal in quotes, I think that there are many seniors who are very cautious about being in public places. I think isolation has had long-term effects on them. I also think that for those individuals who probably struggled a little bit with mental health prior to COVID or some physical health things that were manageable, I think after COVID, it just opened those gates and they've just continued to kind of escalate.
Okay, a few more. Number eight, emotional abuse such as yelling, threats, and isolation is the most frequently reported type.
That is common when we talk about yes.
Okay. Number nine, financial exploitation, which we've talked about some, includes scams, stolen benefits, forged checks, and unauthorized access to accounts. I mean, this temptation here, right, where you've got these folks, I mean, whoever they might be, that they've got these resources gathered over a lifetime and somebody, whether it's family or otherwise, and so, yeah, first of all, talk about that.
Well, and I think you're right. It's especially since COVID, we've seen a significant increase in financial exploitation. Romance scams, I think isolation's had a lot to do with how these things have grown exponentially. Romance scams, Bitcoin scams, computer takeovers, so where an entity will identify themselves as the IT department of a bank or your credit card and things of that nature. And I think people unknowingly share information that allows the person to have access. And by the time they really fully understand what the other individuals up to, their information has been stolen, money has been transferred, and it's all done. And at times this goes to overseas accounts or accounts that aren't trackable, and many folks never recoup those monies or very little of those monies.
And what can be done to guard against that?
You know, I think whenever you're utilizing any technology, whether it be your phone, your computer or some type of a pad of sorts, don't divulge any of your information. If they ask for information, like your last four of your social security, and they're saying this is your bank or this is your credit card, I would not do that. I would definitely call the credit card company or the bank and have a conversation with them. If they're needing information, they will not just randomly contact you for that information. So I would refuse to share that information. I also, I would make sure you have high security on all your electronic devices so it's harder for them to gain access, whether it be passwords and things of that nature. Often we find seniors who are not putting passwords on, or they're just doing things like 123 or something that's very, very easily guessed. So it's all about being technology savvy.
Mm-hmm. And finally, most elder abuse goes unreported due to fear, dependence, or isolation. So despite this growing amount from COVID on, despite the fact one in six adults over the age of 60 have experienced abuse in a community setting within the past year globally, it's what we would suspect. Most elder abuse goes unreported due to other kinds of abuse, due to fear, dependence, or isolation.
Right. Often individuals depend on other people, whether it's emotional support, financial support, or they might be their primary caregiver. And they're very hesitant to say anything, as this is their support person, and they are afraid they will be left with no one. So it really does become problematic that way.
Eau Claire County Social Work Manager Nancy Welzine. Part two of our conversation on the growing problem of elder abuse on Chippewa Valley this week on WWIB and WOGO. Before that, our thanks to Fierce Freedom Executive Director Cap Morgan, commenting on two national stories from the week gone by. That does it for this edition of Chippewa Valley This Week, a public affairs program of WWIB and WOGO. I'm Mark Halverson. Thanks for listening.